Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Thursday, October the 7th, 2021, 15 minutes past the hour. And we have got an amazing show for you this morning, so tear the dial off the radio or put a piece of tape on your cell phone or listening device so you won't be able to change this station for the next two solid hours. Coming up at 9:10 today, we're going to be joined by former mayor of the city of Columbus and former OSU football star Greg Leshutka. And when it comes to politics here in Ohio and the Ohio State Buckeyes, there's a lot going on, so former Mayor Greg Leshutka this morning at 9:10 a.m. And we have got one of the best guests, period, to open up the show today. But before we do that, we do want to keep people informed on local news. And yesterday, really the last 24 hours, we have a big local story. So I just want to catch you up on that very quick, quickly before we go to our first guest. Now, as many of you know, the mayor was on last week. We have had an ongoing situation with the local auditor. The books for the city of Marion have not been reconciled. We have thought up until yesterday. Now, I'm saying that to say that we don't believe the books have been reconciled. There have been special city council meetings that I have attended. There have been questions posed to the auditor's office. The state auditors have been in Marion, and the books have not been reconciled. Why is this important? There was a deadline of September 30th that if the books were not reconciled for the city of Marion, the city of Marion could not apply for grants, federal grants, and these are the books for 2020, by the way, could not apply for federal grants that help fund Marion Area Transit, help fund the Senior Center, also some police and firefighters. Now, all that being said, that's been the story we have had so far. Yesterday, our city auditor, Robert Landon, released a statement to the media. I'm not going to read it all, but I'm going to read the first paragraph here. Contrary to the information and statements that have been made covering the responsibilities of my office, I wanted to take the opportunity, this opportunity, in fact, to let you know what exactly is the truth, not the false statements some have made. My office has met our deadline that is required of us to maintain our books. The report was submitted and referred to as the annual information filing. This was completed in a timely manner. Further, my office has submitted all information to the state auditors in reference to the reconciliation of our finances. Now, here's the thing. As soon as that statement came out yesterday, I contacted the mayor's office and I said, "Mayor, are the books reconciled?" The mayor responded he had been given no indication from the state auditors that the books were reconciled. I contacted Robert Landon through email and through Messenger on social media. I asked Robert Landon, "Do you have confirmation from the state auditors that the books have been reconciled?" No response. I asked Robert Landon to come on this show today or tomorrow and explain this to us. No response to this point. But the door is still open for City Auditor Robert Landon. Also, if we go back in time, the city has received two extensions because the books weren't filed on time. That's fact. We do know that. And as of last Monday's city council meeting, there was still an ongoing discussion with his office as to why the books We're not reconciled. Now, to sum all this up and move on to our first guest, which I want to do very quickly, Robert Landon, as we know, has been suffering with COVID-19 or had a bad bout with COVID-19. He's 31 years old, and we have seen pictures of him with an oxygen tank, and it's severe, COVID-19 severe. There's no doubt about it. I don't believe he's been in the office for about 2 months now, maybe a little over. But we did see video of him at church giving his testimony on surviving COVID-19. Well, independent city council at large member, Josh Daniels, released a statement yesterday to, and I want to make sure I get the publication correct here, to the Crawford County Now website. And this is what our city councilman at large has said. He says that Landon has yet to return to work. Now, here's the quote from City Councilman at Large Josh Daniels, independent. He's jerking on the heartstrings of the community for all it's worth. There's a special place in hell for the Pharisees and this guy. If that oxygen tank can go to church, it can come to the office. I hope the community does not continue to fall for it. And that's Josh Daniels, independent city councilman, not running for re-election this year, by the way. And if we get any more information on this story, we will try to fill in the gaps. Now we turn to one of my favorite people. You have known him for a half century. He has covered the presidents. He has been an anchor on the highly successful Top 10 News Magazine Primetime Live, hosted this week the Sunday morning show with the late Cokie Roberts, and has become a good friend of this show, and thank goodness, to help us sort out all national problems and problems in the news. He is Sam Donaldson. Sam, how are you?
I'm fine, Scott. And listening to the story of Robert Landon, I just think it's wonderful from the standpoint of a little microcosm of what's happening in the entire country. For instance, I'm not going to insert myself in the story. I don't have the facts except what you just said. But here we have a situation in which, unless something is done quickly, this community of yours is going to not be able to get from the pork barrel, the federal money. Now, we're all for fiscal responsibility. I am, you are, your listeners are, until it's something that would deprive us of our share of the federal pot of money. And my goodness, this is really true. I mean, that should be taken to church, along with Mr. Landon's unfortunate condition from the standpoint of suffering from COVID-19. By the way, do you know whether he was vaccinated or not?
You know, he has not talked to anybody. Nobody really knows. Now, I do know that the mayor was on at one point, and he said, this is why we encourage vaccinations. Now, I don't know if that was an implication that Mr. Landon had not been vaccinated, but he is 31 years old, and he is on an oxygen tank now.
Well, you know, the Republican Party, among other things it's doing, is trying to devour itself over many of these issues, such as vaccination. And the most interesting story that I've seen in the last 24 hours has come from Idaho, which has a Republican governor and Republican lieutenant governor. The Republican governor is at a conference, or I think he just came home tonight, or will tonight, away from the state. And the Constitution says when the governor's out, well, the lieutenant governor can assume the full powers of the governorship. So the governor left town. The lieutenant governor, a woman, immediately offered an executive order to repeal his mask and his vaccination program for all the Idahoans. She believes, well, I won't characterize her belief, but you see which side of the party she's on. He said word that when he got back, he's going to reinsert by repealing her executive order and the mask and the vaccination. Meanwhile, she's trying to organize the Idaho National Guard and send them down to the border of Texas and Mexico to keep those people from just overflowing our country. And he's not going to allow that. Well, these are two Republicans. They represent different parts of the Republican Party, and they're devouring each other in Idaho in public view. I will say she has a reason. She apparently wants to run for governor against her present governor. So it's politics as well as the idea that on vaccinations or masks, you either help save your life and the life of other people, or you just sit there bravely and take the chance. Although you allow your children to be given polio vaccinations, so that he'd become like Franklin Roosevelt with the loss of the legs or the old iron lung business. And we're going to have rubella vaccinations. We get all sorts of vaccinations. And we have a new one coming up on the world scene for malaria. And if this malaria vaccine works and can be properly distributed in the great climates where malaria is prevalent, think of the millions of lives it will save. Unless, of course, someone says, my goodness, this is big government imposing its will on us. How dare it? I'll just die. Well, go ahead.
Well, and just to put an exclamation point on this local story for people who don't know, to fill in the cracks here, Robert Landon is a Republican, the mayor is a Democrat, and Josh Daniels, the councilman, is an independent. What is so odd about this story is we know for sure, there are some things we know for sure. We know that there were two extensions filed with the state that were approved. The third extension was denied. And up until this past Monday, because the auditor's been out with COVID, I believe he hasn't been in the office for somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 months now, that representatives from his office have said the books are not reconciled as of Monday. So this statement that came out yesterday, we're all confused. And we're all waiting for confirmation from the state, from Robert Landon or from his office, and to not just respond is very confusing, and it's obviously ticked off some city council members.
Well, usually when you don't have a response, there could be a reason. You have to get your material together, you have to make certain you have your facts and what have you. But quite often when people don't respond in that situation, they don't really have a good response. And so hunkering down and keeping your head down and hoping that the good Lord will save you is the recourse. Well, sometimes the good Lord is busy, he, she, it, and is doing other things. And if you don't take it into your own self to save yourself, and in this case the community, then of course you're neglecting your duty. But you know, I don't want to beat up on the Republicans so much as much without beating up on the Democrats. Look what they're doing on Capitol Hill. They are out apparently, without meaning to, I suppose, to destroying a president of their own party and themselves. If they can't come to an agreement on these two bills, how to pass the infrastructure bill of $1 trillion, and how to come up with a bill for general welfare on so many other subjects that everybody's for, except, of course, the fossil fuel industry, except, of course, the pharmaceutical industry, except, of course, wealthy people, but most of us are for, then they're not going to get reelected in the swing districts next year. And they're in 2024, face the prospect of guess who? Here he is. How stupid. And yet, when I say stupid, I don't mean to impose my belief that I'm superior to them. I'm simply saying we all do things that are not in our own best interest because of emotion. I hate to get philosophical on you, but Nietzsche, the philosopher, said there are two parts of us. One is the analytical part, the reasonable part, the part that looks at facts, the part that tries to reason out our life. And the other part is the emotional part. Oh, I'd love to do this, or I hate that, or this, what have you, without reference to the facts. And so we get to have going here on both parties people who are using their emotional part rather than their sensible, I guess I better pay attention to science, I better pay attention to the facts, I better pay attention to the truth side. And it's a fight for all of us.
And speaking of that, we have learned as of yesterday that President Biden now is at a new low. Popularity ratings, 57% is what we have as of yesterday. And a lot of this caused by, well, three things are really making this up. The Democrats not being able to come to any kind of agreement on these bills. Certainly the debt ceiling, which is front page story, front page on all the networks for the last really couple weeks. And how COVID is being handled, there's such a divide in that. Right now, fully vaccinated people in the United States sits at 57%, and President Biden, I think the number he was hoping for was 70 to 80% by July 4th, 57% on October the 7th.
Well, again, I mean, people are, for political reasons, for the idea that they're supporting their party, or they're supporting, you know, the people who say, the Constitution gives me the freedom. I have freedom here. I can, yeah, you have freedom, except to speed down the highway and kill me or somebody else. You have freedom to do so many things, except the law says no, You can't impose your selfish will on a community's problems or a community's ability to survive. You don't have that kind of freedom, and you never thought it again for your children and prevented them from getting the polio vaccine. So what are you doing? Well, we know what you're doing. For some reason, you believe it's supporting your party or your ideology or a person that you just admire thoroughly for whatever reasons. And I think we've never seen anything like this. At least I haven't in my short 87 years.
Can we say safely at this point, Sam, looking at the Obama administration, looking at the Trump administration, and looking at now the Biden administration, that things cannot get past? The party lines are so sharp now that nobody can agree on anything. Nothing of really any substantiation gets passed, and it's constant fighting. It's fodder for journalists, but is that the way it is? Is there any way to fix this problem?
If I had a formula, I would praise it preach it from the rooftops. No, I mean, we are set in our beliefs now that the other side is not just wrong, and we'll kind of debate our views and come to an agreement, but the other side is un-American, doesn't belong in this country, must be forced out in some way. Now, where did that come from? It's not just destructive at the moment that can destroy the country, as we know. I do think, as an optimist, as an eternal optimist, I do think we're going to get through this. You talk about the president's popularity, right? Hey, that's the way it goes for presidents and other people who are in public office. When things are going well, you get the credit, whether you deserve it or not. When things are going badly, you get the blame, whether you deserve that or not. And that's part of the job, as old Harry said. If you can't stand the heat, stay out of the kitchen. Don't whine. Oh, my goodness. So here's the president. He is caught in this jam of his own party on Capitol Hill preventing these two bills from coming through one side or the other. Because when they come through, when people are getting that child credit, the biggest tax break for the middle class that have children that you've ever seen, when people are getting some relief from some of the problems of debt and being evicted from their homes and all of that, they're going to like him, whether he did it or not. So at the moment, his party holds in its hands on Capitol Hill the ability to make Joe Biden once again a fairly popular president, or keep him in the doghouse and make certain that not he alone, but they too will go down.
Sam, President Obama was known as a guy who was really not a schmoozer, didn't understand how to do that. And certainly the tag on President Trump was a very divisive guy, name caller, couldn't get anything done there. But here comes Joe Biden. He's an older gentleman. He's been in Washington for years. He can reach across to the other side. So far, isn't working. Well, what happened there?
Well, he is the guy you describe. I was covering the Senate for ABC News when he was elected and came to the Senate, and have followed him, and I think many people have over the years. He's made mistakes, but basically his policies were fairly popular, his views, and as a gentleman, as opposed to some who now use vulgarity as if it were their second nature and language, he was someone you'd like to be around. But the strength of presidents also at times is measured, and he's being measured right now. Let me tell you about Mitch McConnell. Very shrewd politician, very shrewd manager for the Republican side. Mitch McConnell sent word yesterday that, all right, on the debt limit, which he's had until that moment, the Democrats would have to pass for themselves. He said it's unmistakable that it must be passed, but we, the Republicans, have nothing to do with that. I don't know whether we're in the country or not, but certainly, and yes, it's true, under our administration, we piled up several $1 trillion of national debt, but it's up to you. He has now broken it. He has now said, well, I'll give you a two-month extension if you use reconciliation. He is now worried that Biden, this guy that you describe as being kind of quiet and all that, might actually get up and say, let's change the filibuster rule. Let's modify the filibuster rule at last. The creature of the Senate, Biden has always been against something like that. Because the Democrats, if they get together, if Mr. Manchin and Ms. Sinema actually get together with them, being nominal Democrats, but certainly not of the party's main group view at the moment, then they can modify the filibuster. And without the filibuster rule, Mitch McConnell's legs are cut off. He cannot oppose the John Lewis Voting Rights Act effectively. He cannot oppose these two bills that I've talked about effectively. He cannot say, well, you do that limit by yourself and try to get political credit with the ideological group that thinks somehow we shouldn't pay our bills, even if they don't realize that we're paying past bills, not future bills. So Mitch McConnell now is, well, how can be reasonable? What do you mean? He's trying to save his ability to be unreasonable. Good for you, Mitch. Get in there, son. Fight hard. Let's see what happens. If Biden can't decide which is more important, in one sense, the underpinnings at the moment of his presidency and the underpinnings at the moment of re-election, particularly in the swing districts of his own party members, and say, I've got the bigger knife and I'm going to use it right now. If he can't do that, Mitch wins. Okay, they'll have the two-month extension. Well, that takes me, according to the calendar, to December. And you and I are once again discussing we're about to default because Mitch still has the hammer, still has the knife taken away from him. And now he's got to have another tactic, and it may be the tactic of some part of cooperation.
Where we sit on October 7th, how likely percentage-wise today is it that this filibuster rule will be taken away?
Well, I think it's the last resort that the Democrats have. But as I say, pardon me, Mitch has now said, well, wait a moment, we can help some if you do it through reconciliation. But in doing about reconciliation, they won't be able to cure a so-called filibuster knife in their back. And secondly, it'll take 2 weeks. Well, by October 16th, is that next week? I mean, where's your calendar? We could default, according to the people who study the money and where the Treasury stands on this debt ceiling business. And if we were to default, the whole world, talk about the big depression of the 30s, the whole world, which still hinges on the U.S. dollar and the haven of U.S. securities, collapses. Well, you think it couldn't possibly happen. Well, I think it won't happen because I'm an optimist. And the thought of going into a worldwide depression because Mitch has got the hammer is just a little too much.
The people who read newspapers, the people who vote in elections, the people who read the internet, the people who listen to radio, television, so on and so forth, when they see debt ceiling, when they see default, which is on the front pages and if not the front pages inside the newspapers, are not, if it's not the lead story on television, it's a story the last month or so. Do they really understand what it means? Do they really understand that in less than 2 weeks, the world could be in a national crisis because of this?
Well, I think they understand whether they understand the details and whether they read the New York Times or the Dayton newspaper or what have you. I think they understand that a lot of people think we're in a crisis situation, and they themselves, from the standpoint not of the debt ceiling, but all these other matters, understand that they personally may be in a monetary crisis. They personally may be in a personal crisis. They understand there's a lot of bad stuff going on. So the question I think you're really asking is, but do they understand why? And if some person or some group of people or some party is responsible, do they understand that? And the answer is, in my view, without taking a poll of your listeners, probably most of your listeners do understand a lot about the details, enough to know who's doing what to whom and with what effect and whether it's a good thing. Because people who would listen, well, take the time to listen to me, they've got to have, I got to admire them, and they got to have some reason to believe that maybe I have something to say which would help them in the understanding. Whether they agree with it or not is another thing. Power to them. You don't have to agree with me. But if I present something and say, you know, this seems to be the facts, and you don't think they are, then you better come up not just with your opinion or the opinion of some political leader that you respect who says, you better come up by looking at the situation and coming up with facts that are different, but not different simply because you would like to see them different, but because, you know, it's like Newton's first law of gravity. The apple falls down toward the ground. It doesn't fall up. And if I say it falls down, and one of your political leaders says, no, the apple falls sideways, and you disagree with me, you better come up with something that's factually true from the scientific standpoint, not just someone else's opinion.
Sam, the reason for that question is the other stories of our time right now, COVID-19, certainly everybody knows what that is. They are researching for good and bad because of misinformation put out on the internet. What the booster shot does, what the vaccine does, what the rates are. People get that story, it seems like. Abortion law in Texas and the Supreme Court. People understand what that's all about. Facebook, this amazing story, the whistleblower story on Facebook, with Facebook, that was reported on 60 Minutes last week. People get that. They understood Facebook went down on Monday for 6 hours and threw their life and Instagram into a mess. But when it comes to words like debt ceiling and default and all that, it doesn't seem to be in America as big a story as the three preceding stories I talked about.
Well, maybe it's because, as you suggest, people understand them better. And this thing called the debt ceiling that must be raised, I think people, you know, a lot of people are ignorant. Now, by ignorant, I'm not imputing their minds or their ability to think through things. I just mean dictionary definition. Of this particular item, they are ignorant about the facts. I'm ignorant about the facts about a lot of things, but on this, they don't understand what the debt ceiling is, and maybe they shouldn't, because we shouldn't have a debt ceiling. What we should do is curtail our spending if we want to curtail it, and that might improve the economy in senses, and sometimes we may need to spend more to save people from poverty and extreme hardship. But they think somehow the debt ceiling keeps us from spending more money. Wrong. All it does is say you can't pay the bills you already have incurred. You owe Scott $100 because you borrowed from and never paid him back 3 months ago. But your treasury can't pay it to Scott as long as there's a ceiling saying we've now exhausted the debt that we have the ability to pay, so we can't pay it. Well, that's ridiculous, isn't it? Pay your bills. Hey, guys, let's pay our bills. And if we don't want to incur more bills or higher bills, let's not spend the money. But people don't understand that. And you say they understand these other things. I don't know that they understand the other things. For instance, here is this large bill that started out Biden wanting $3.5 trillion for a whole host of programs. The child benefit, which is the greatest anti-poverty tax cut for the middle class we've had. Money to save the environment, because if we don't, scientists say we have a very short time in order to save our environment, our planet, and the lives of our great-grandchildren. And drugs. You can go to Canada and buy the good prescription drugs manufactured by U.S. pharmaceutical companies, sometimes for less than half the price that we have to pay them, that Medicare has to pay for them. Why is that? Because the pharmaceutical industry opposes cutting prices for average Americans. Now, they don't put it that way. Can you see an ad from the pharmaceutical industry saying, we oppose cutting prices for average Americans because we want to make a lot of money. Thank you for watching our ad. Are you kidding? No. They complain about when you buy these foreign drugs, you don't know whether they're efficient or not. You don't know whether they're harmful. Hey, you made them. If they're harmful in Canada but not harmful in the United States, explain that, please. So that's in the bill. I mean, I'm just going down a list of things that are in this big, originally $3.5 trillion bill. So here, it's now down to $2.2 trillion. They're negotiating. The Democrats are negotiating themselves. Actually, they're negotiating with Senators Manchin and Sinema, two Democrats, one from West Virginia, one from Arizona. Now, in Joe Manchin's case, we kind of know some of his opposition. I credit him with some actually meaning that he wants to reduce federal spending. But, of course, in this bill, money for saving the environment would badly impact the coal industry. And guess which state produces the most coal in the United States? Well, yes, you got it. You figured it. Now, Joe's not going to say, hey, I have to take care of my constituents. That's my job. I certainly do in order to be elected again. And so I'm going to have to oppose this bill's spending. I'm not going to oppose it. Well, I understand you have to clean up the environment. But if I can get the bill down to $1.5 trillion, they have to squeeze all these programs, particularly a program to save the environment, which badly impacts the coal industry. Well, Joe, okay, in Senator Sinema's case, she won't say. She declines to say what her opposition is based on. She's a free spirit. She won, for the first time in years and years, a Democratic senatorial seat in the great state of Arizona. And she figures that she knows now the constituents of hers who will reelect her someday. Well, all right, exactly what in this bill you don't like. She doesn't know, or she knows probably, but she won't say. Now, if they can get those two together, they can make the deal. Maybe it's on 2.2. Maybe it comes down to 2. Joe has to come up from 1.5, and he knows that. And in the old days, you made the deal. Can I just give you my best example from 1965? I covered all the Senate greats and the great debate over Medicare. Most of the Republicans in the Senate opposed the concept of Medicare, that it wasn't the federal government's business to bail out old folks. They wanted to help old folks. They were not against old folks. But it was the wrong thing, the expansion of big government. Yeah, I think it was a principled stand, if you want to take that view, and they did. And they fought hard against the Democrats who wanted this thing called Medicare. And they lost in the committee, and they had a little chance on the floor to put a little couple of amendments through, but not real. So it came time to vote in the final passage. And almost half the Republicans who had opposed the Medicare concept voted for it. You say, well, why would they do that? Two-faced? No. So they realized you had to help the old folks somehow. They thought this was the wrong way, but it was the majority view, and these people had the votes, and they're not going to be on record against helping old folks because that's not their view. They wanted to help them. They made a deal, in other words. They had to in this case. The other people have the votes. But today what's happening is if the other people have the votes, we'll find some way to subvert their votes. We'll somehow work around their vote, not just, you know, elect other people who will reverse their vote democratically in the Senate and the House, but we'll prevent them from winning even though they won. And that's part of this thing that is keeping this country divided and tearing us apart.
As we head into the holiday season, COVID-19 is certainly still around us. Again, 57% of the country fully vaccinated. That's the number we have at this time. We just are, we are in the middle of a surge of the Delta variant. Booster shots are available. Right now, they're saying mostly for the elderly or people in compromising positions. But 57%, just over half. What has happened?
Again, it's political. Again, it's an ideological view that somehow... Now, there have been some anti-vaxxers very prominent for years and years. Bobby Kennedy's son, Robert Kennedy Jr., for years has been against almost all vaccines. As far as I know, all vaccines, because he said nature didn't put that in our bodies and it could be harmful to us. Bobby's son, I don't agree with you, but he was in a minority. Very few anti-vaxxers had the power to change legislation in the country. Now, because they believe it's a political stand, and it's a stand against the Constitution's ability to let you do anything you want, no matter what the rest of the community says. I don't know how to cure that. I don't know what you take with 30% of the country that many, many years ago, you talk about vaccination, you don't have 30% of the country against vaccinating the children, vaccinating themselves. Now you have it against this particular vaccine. I suppose the others are okay. And why is this particular vaccine? Well, it's like Dr. Fauci. I know Tony Fauci. When I lived in Washington, I knew him well. And here he is, one of the world's top infectious disease experts, expert because of his work over all these years, telling us what we can do to help save ourselves and save other people. And he is the object of death threats. He's the object of the kind of venom that... And a commentator named Hugh Hewitt interviewed him the other day and suggested he resign. Now, why? Well, Hugh said, you know, Dr. Fauci, I believe in vaccines, and I think you're doing a good job, except there are so many people who don't like you. Now, if you would resign, it might take away the irritant, and maybe we can get some of those people. I'm for vaccines, but I want you to resign. And I thought to myself, well, thank goodness Hugh wasn't around in the 30s to advise Franklin Roosevelt to resign. Until we entered World War II, 40% of the country, according to the reputable Gallup poll, didn't like Roosevelt, thought he was wrong. Some of them hated him. Father Coughlin, the Catholic priest on the radio, didn't have television in those days, lambasted him regularly every week. So poor Roosevelt is there. 40% of the country doesn't like him, just like so many people don't like Dr. Fauci. And yet he didn't resign. So what he was able to do was create Social Security. Would you live without it today? The FEC, which attempts to regulate Wall Street with one degree of success or another. The CCC, which put men out of work in those days, earning no money, to work the forest roads, buildings and all that, but having some income. And my favorite, the REA. 1 year after I was born, thanks to the Rural Electrification Administration, electricity came to our farmhouse in southern New Mexico. So poor Franklin Roosevelt, disliked by 40% of the country, managed to go through without resigning and managed to go down in history as one of our greatest presidents from the standpoint of things he accomplished for the general public. And here's Tony Fauci with death threats. Who are these people? I don't want to go on because I get very emotional about this. Nature would say my emotional side comes into play.
And when it comes to this, the symbol has become a mask. How did that happen?
I don't know. I don't like wearing the mask. I do it. Even though I have been shot twice, and fortunately, only by Moderna, one of the vaccines that's been approved for emergency use. And because of my age, I've already gotten the booster shot. So I've done as much as science can help me to be protected. But I also wear the mask. And why is that? Because science also tells us that even though we have escaped ourselves, the horrible consequences of being infected by COVID-19, we can be, rather by the virus, we can be infected and not know it, and we can spread it to other people. So if I go to the grocery store and somehow I'm infected, but I don't feel it, I don't know it, I mean, it's such a mild case because of the vaccine, why couldn't I help prevent the virus from being spread by me to other people? I cannot understand the reason that people go in, I won't wear a mask. Again, it's uncomfortable, it's burdensome, it's something like that, that we don't want to go through life wearing a mask, although coal miners to keep from dying prematurely of the disease from coal mining. But the point is, I don't understand, I've said repeatedly, I think I do understand because the political, ideological pushback against science or against reason that people today have embraced, that we are so tribal. Tribal, of course, that humans got up off four feet. Tribes have been part of our anatomy, our makeup as human beings, but it has come so far that tribalism now in this democracy of ours is threatening the democracy and threatening our country.
I want to talk about Facebook. The big story last week on 60 Minutes, a whistleblower came forward and said that Facebook really is about making money. They really don't care about misinformation. They really don't care about how it affects society. It's really, bottom line, all about making money. What do you make of this story?
I think it's all about making money, but primarily, look, the capitalistic system. And basically, I think it's a good system whenever we can curb the excesses, curb the greedy, curb the people, the sharpies and all of that, because it gives people the right to move upward according to their own abilities and according to the way how hard they would work. And I love that. You work hard, it's better to work hard than be lucky or to do something else. However, here's Zuckerberg, and here's this great worldwide huge behemoth called Facebook, and they use the algorithms so that if you stumble on one hate site, you go and say, hey, this guy who says those kids that were killed in Connecticut, they weren't killed, they were government actors. By the way, as you know, he's just lost a suit. Every dime of his is going to go to parents of those children who, of course, were killed in Connecticut. Then Facebook's algorithm immediately starts sending you, whether you want to or not, the opportunity to go to other hate sites. Here's a white supremacy site. Here's this site. Hey, I'll take a look at that. It spreads the kind of disinformation and hateful information that you didn't ask for. You asked to look at one site, and it now brings you, because being human, you're curious and all of that, to the worst kinds of misinformation, hateful information. So Zuckerberg has a lot to answer for, because he always says, oh, we reform, and yes, we don't do it on purpose, and we'll straighten it up, but it's straightened up. And now legislation, he's going to face it. This is one time, Scott, one issue in which both parties on Capitol Hill are together, the Republicans, the Democrats. They understand it, and they all want to curtail his and the ability of other search engines like his and programs like his to lure particularly children into the worst kind of misinformation.
Well, it's interesting, because we and certainly nobody wants to lure children into bad situations, but we look at freedom of speech and we look at freedom of the press. Now, we have Fox News, which people for years have said is a wing of the Republican Party. It spouts out false news. And then you have MSNBC. People say it's clearly a liberal stance and slant, and that's where they get their stances from. And people are editorializing all the time. But when it comes to Facebook, their goal, I guess in some ways, misinformation is brought from their goal of money, but we're coming down on them harder than we would on a network. I don't think it's even been brought up. And the networks are controlled by the FCC, not only the Constitution. What's the difference for people who don't understand that?
Well, we do have some regulation over broadcasting, telecasting, public communication of that sort. Of course, from time to time it changes. The Republicans in the 80s did away with the so-called Fairness Doctrine, which said to television and radio stations, you can editorialize if you want to, because it's your property and you can give your point of view just as a newspaper can, but you have to give some time to opposing points of view. Republicans thought that's a terrible idea, because the time would be given from some of the right-wing stations, Sinclair, etc., group, to an opposing view. They want that. But we have regulation. And Facebook, so far, the regulation of these huge entities has been nominal, but I think it's going to be tightened, and I hope it will be tightened. I mean, when we have an injustice or a view that's hurting society, we're kind of slow to recognize it because it hurts you and the next door, not you and all that. But now it's hurting, I think, more and more people understand that it hurts us all, and particularly, again, children and people who don't have access to other information.
Final story this morning, tied into media. Should President Trump have his Twitter page back? He wants it back. He's contacting judges.
Well, I'm not sure of the rules that Twitter imposes, but I in a general way I am, but not the technicalities. If they have a right to issue rules for people, they're a private organization, again, unless they have government regulation that forbids it, they can decide who admit and not. Stores can't. It's a public accommodation. Hilton Hotel can't say, I don't like the color of your skin. No. But Twitter can do whatever it wants, and you either abide by its rules or you have your account closed. And they felt that President Trump did not abide by their rules from the standpoint of factual information. He said things that are not true. And they have a rule, again, I can't cite it exactly, which says you can't continue to use your Twitter account to promulgate not just your opinion, which may differ from mine, but falsehoods. And I think if that's their rule, it's a good rule. And if he wants to continue to do falsehoods, I think his account should not be reinstated.
The one and only Sam Donaldson. Sam, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
It's my pleasure, Scott. Good luck.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a break. Be back in 15 minutes.
Or not. Do you go home at night, Helen, and think, my goodness, this person said that, this person said that? Does it keep you up at nights?
Well, I don't say it keeps me up at night. I have to